WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. 46 years ago, a young photographer named Marilyn Nance got the opportunity of a lifetime. Nance was a 23-year-old student at the Pratt Institute, an art school in Brooklyn, and she had never left the country. But she became one of the official photographers to document a festival called Festac 77, which was held in Lagos, Nigeria. Festac was huge, an arts and culture festival featuring artists from across Africa and the diaspora. Nance spent a month soaking up the atmosphere and preserving its spirit in photographs that are only now being published in a book called Last Day in Lagos. Marilyn Nance talked with our staff writer Julian Lucas about her experience and why so many of us have never heard of Festac 77.
Festac 77 was like a Woodstock. It was like a biennial. There were art exhibitions. It was like the Olympics because we all marched around a stadium in our national dress. It was a meeting of African folks from all over the world.
All our roots and our part in Black culture and African culture was incredible. And I looked around at this sea of Black faces, and I had never seen a collection of Black people larger than New York, larger than America, and this was the largest collection of Black people I had ever seen in my life. And I felt the earth move. I felt that there was a place here for us, and we are not Nigerian, we are not African, but we are an African people.
This is the motherland, and it's taken me all...
You were involved in the Black arts movement from a young age, and I wonder if you had a sense of the significance of this festival before you went.
I did, but I never thought that I would get to be like this age, and I thought that I would be talking about Festac in 1978 and not in 2022. You know, I did not know then that it would be disappeared from history. I thought it was something that was so big to me and to all the other participants that surely this would be something that would resonate for years and years to come. And I think that if someone had gotten, if there's some tragic something that happened, everybody would remember, but it was a joyful thing. And I guess maybe there was no investment in celebrating Black joy.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You are welcome to Nigeria, where the Festac is taking place. Here in Nigeria, in Africa. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
It's really extraordinary how much it's been forgotten when you see your photographs and you see Stevie Wonder, Miriam Makeba, Sun Ra in this wonderful procession of nations.
But I've been witness to a lot of extraordinary events. And it points to the fact that a lot doesn't get said. And I knew that. I knew that even as a youngster. I knew the way that our lives were regarded. And I knew differently. And I think that's why I set upon becoming a photographer, because there are things that I saw that I just wanted other people to witness as well. But making the photographs is one thing. Getting them seen is quite another thing.
Mm.
They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people.
I wanted to ask you about a great photo you took of Queen Mother Moore.
The, that picture.
And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about her and why it was so significant that she was there at the festival.
At the making of that photograph, Queen Mother Moore was greeting, you know, making some exclamation, which I wish I remembered, but I have the photograph. I don't know what she said, but...
It's a really regal photograph of her. And what I loved after reading about her was this is someone who had been an activist since the Scottsboro Boys, who had been part of Marcus Garvey's movement, which of course was so centered around returning to Africa. And then decades later, here she is in a very different cultural, political moment.
Well, I wouldn't say different. I would say it's a continuum. She talked about reclaiming your African personhood. She talked about reparations, and she was the connecting thread. There were numbers of distinguished elders. That was her position. And Joseph Delaney, who was there who was part of the Harlem Renaissance. There was Ernest Critchlow, Nadi Kumar, elder musicians, young people. There was a whole continuum of the Black creative spectrum, you know, in the visual arts, the spoken word. Jane Cortez was there, Melvin Edwards. I mean, just...
Since you're mentioning all these artists and performers, I remember reading that at one night in the Festac Village where the delegates were staying, Stevie Wonder came hung out with the delegation. What do you remember about that?
Well, I don't even remember how we knew that he was there, but there he was. It was almost like a campfire situation, except for there was no fire. I don't remember what he said, but we were just like, oh, Stevie Wonder, you know.
Music is a world within itself. With a language we all understand.
All of the action was in Festac Village because all of the delegations, all of the contingents were there, and there was music. I mean, I would lay down and, like, I'm exhausted, but then you'd hear drums over here and music over there. You could not rest in Festac Village. And maybe Stevie heard about that, showed up with Samela Lewis and Louis Farrakhan and Jeff Donaldson.
East or west, Africa is my home.
It's not like I have a fantastic memory, but I do have photographs, and that's how I remember. I astound people with my, air quotes, memory. But I see these images a lot.
There was Mozambique, uniformed in military outfits, reflecting their difficult armed struggle for independence. The sneakers they wore lightened their feet as they did traditional dances. From Europe came the Afro-Swedish and the Afro-Irish. Several hundred blacks from the United States participated. For the most part...
I wonder if you could take us to the Parade of Nations, the opening ceremony. Some of the kind of most immediately spectacular photos in your book are from that You know, 54 countries, you have Malian kora players, traditional masquerade performers,
and it wasn't singing in a groups. Book. I mean, like, we've only seen those images in books, but there we are, and they're real people. And they're looking at us like we've only seen these people, like, in movies or in books. We were just all staring at each other like, we're here.
An element of culture shock, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it wasn't like I was looking at the Parade of Nations. I was part of that Parade of Nations. We were just amazed at each other.
Africa, continent of future.
And I know it wasn't just a Black cultural festival. It was Black and African. Could you explain that?
Algeria was represented, Morocco, Egypt, Tunisia. These are countries on the continent of Africa that may not have claimed Blackness, but they're African. And then there were people from the diaspora who claimed Blackness, including, I was really surprised to see the Australian contingent, because we had been educated to believe that Australians were Asian, or I don't know what we were told, but here they were, dark-skinned people at a Black and African festival. And I was like,
Photographer Marilyn Nance, talking with Julian Lucas on the New Yorker Radio Hour. We'll continue in just a moment.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Hi, it's David Remnick. As the 2024 election draws near, it's more important than ever to understand exactly what's happening in American politics. The New Yorker offers definitive reporting and analysis by some of the best writers and political thinkers watching the campaign. Commentators and reporters, including Susan Glasser, Jane Mayer, Jelani Cobb, Masha Gessen, Evan Osnos, Ben Wallace Wells, and many more are providing incisive analysis that you don't want to miss. Subscribers get unlimited access to all of it. And we're offering a deal just for podcast listeners, 15% off a yearly digital subscription. Visit newyorker.com and use the code POD15. That's POD15 for 15% off a digital subscription to The New Yorker.
On stage in the Nigerian National Theater, Sun Ra and his orchestra.
There's a great picture of Sun Ra's rehearsal shed in the book, with people just climbing on ladders, crawling to look underneath the wall, standing on tires. To me, that really gets at what the festival was about and what your method of photography is about. This, there's not really a boundary between the spectator and the action. You're part of it all.
I was one of those people. Like, I don't think I got on any ladders or anything, but I got down low to make some photographs. People crowded around the rehearsal sheds just to see, you know, what folks were doing. That one image points to maybe three or four rolls of film of that one rehearsal. It was amazing just to see, like, acrobatic troops.
The Flying Souls.
The Flying Souls. But there was a troop, and I'm not sure what country they were from, where this man was doing things with his body and bending, and like, I'm looking underneath and finding a space. And yeah, and no one made space for me because I had a camera. I had to find a space like everyone else had to find a space.
I wonder if you could say something about how this book came together. How did Last Day in Lagos get made 45 years after you flew back?
Well, first of all, Last Day in Lagos kind of came out of my knowing that I had work that I wanted to share with a younger audience. There was a group called the Brooklyn Photo Salon, young photographers in Brooklyn. I was like, Brooklyn Photo Salon, young people doing, let me see what's going on. So I started going to some of the meetings and introducing my work. I did a lot of networking, a lot of talking and going places. I wasn't like sitting waiting to be discovered. but it was in Johannesburg. I was presenting the Festac photographs at the Black Portraitures Conference in 2016. And I was there with my husband, Al Santana, my archive fellow, Valerie Caesar, and the artist, Valerie Maynard. We did the panel on Festac, and there was a panel of young people, and Olaremi Onabanjo was on the panel.
This is your editor.
Right, my editor. And I introduced myself to her after the panel was over, and I said something about Festac, and she was like, of course I know what Festac is, I'm Nigerian. Anyway, when she looked at the work, she said, like, I want to do a book.
She recognized its importance.
Right away. And my joke to her was like, Remy, I'm going to let you discover me.
You are still taking. It's true. I mean, where would the whole Western world be without Africa? Our cocoa, our timber, our gold, our diamonds, our platinum, our whatever. Everything you are is us. I am not saying it. It's a fact. And in return for all...
Well, there's something kind of elegiac about your title, Last Day in Lagos, because this was the last festival of its kind, a high point of this Pan-African spirit that wasn't repeated.
Yeah.
It's been 45 years, as you mentioned, since Festac. And I wonder if you could say something about what happened. Why didn't these photos come out?
That's not my business. I did what I did. Ask them, right, whoever them is. You know, ask the historians, ask the publishers, ask, you know, all those people who ignored the work. I mean, I did the work. I didn't hide it.
Did you try to have them published when you came back?
Yeah.
What happened? How did people respond?
I can't tell you how they responded, but I had to go on living. So I started working in advertising. I've taught school. I've worked as a teaching artist. I pretty much know my worth. I know the worth of this culture. I know the value of this event. Even if you don't know it, I know it. And I just had to wait until, like, a new generation came. I think things happen and roll out when they're going to happen. And maybe this is the right time for this.
Well, I think that's a great place to end.
Yeah. You have a good radio voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, you think...
You have a great radio voice, though.
No,
make me sound good, too.
Marilyn Nance's photos of Festac 77 appear in Last Day in Lagos, which came out recently. And Julian Lucas is a staff writer covering culture of all kinds for The New Yorker. The music and clips we heard are from a Festac 77 mixtape compiled by Chimurenga in 2020 and reproduced courtesy of Chimurenga. This is The New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Meryl Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Louis Mitchell. This episode was produced by Max Balton, Rita Green, Adam Howard, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Jeffrey Masters, Louis Mitchell, and Ngofen Mpujabuele, with guidance from Emily Botine and assistance from Harrison Keithline, Mike Kutchman, and Meher Bhatia. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information. Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.